Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. High gas, high stakes politics, and high, high water roll on in the Midwest this week. A whole country, and here contractor Kerry Carpenter struggling to deal with the price of gasoline.
My fuel costs are more than my actual mortgage is by a couple hundred bucks.
Barack Obama rolling in contributions says no to public campaign financing.
We've made the decision not to participate in the public financing system for the general election. This means we'll be foregoing more than $80 million in public funds during the final months of this election.
And from Iowa down the Mississippi, heartbreak, flood, and broken levees, here's Alicia Bright.
Sad to see this happen when we spent all of our time doing all the sandbagging and all the sand to see it break.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. Joining us today from Des Moines, Iowa, is David Yepsen, columnist for the Des Moines Register. David, thanks very much for being here. It's good to have you back. Are you high and dry, my friend?
I am, sir. Thank you.
We're glad to hear that, and we want to learn more. With us from Washington is Matthew Continetti, associate editor of the Weekly Standard. He's author of The K Street Gang, The Rise and Fall of the Republican Machine. Matt, great to have you back as well.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom, David, and Matthew.
Let's get the sound of those Midwest floods in our ear right off the bat. Here it is. Yesterday, George Onick, resident of Louisiana, Missouri, saying he's trying to figure out why there are so many serious floods in the region.
I went through my first 500-year flood in 1973, and our second 500-year flood in 1993, and our third 500-year flood in 2003. And now it's 2008, and we're going through our fourth 500-year flood in one generation.
Fourth 500-year flood in a generation. It sounds bad. The images and the destruction are serious and deep. David Yepsen, has the learning begun from this? What have you, Iowans, and now on down the Mississippi, begun to take away from this disastrous series of weeks?
I think there are a couple things. First of all, the country's infrastructure is not prepared for the threats that they face. We saw in Des Moines in 1993, during that 100-year flood 15 years ago, that the water plant was not adequately protected. And they took steps, and it was protected, and it withstood this flood. And so I think that's the first takeaway, the infrastructure issue. Secondly, suburban growth, parking lots, growth contributes to rapid runoff, and I think that's a problem. And the third thing is the whole global warming issue. There's a lot of discussion now about whether that has somehow contributed to this deluge that we're seeing repeating itself every 10 or 15 years now.
Matt Continetti, you've got a conservative publication there. You've still got Rush Limbaugh and others really snorting at the whole idea of climate change and global warming, the Bush administration's U.S. climate change science program saying yesterday that, well, indeed, it may be climate change at work in these severe weather patterns. Do you see, Matt Continetti, a national consensus emerging around the threats from global climate change at this point? Is it real enough with floods like this, or still open to debate?
I think the science of climate change is pretty much decided in the sense that it's happening and that, it may be anthropogenic, which means, humans are probably playing a role in it. What it lacks consensus, I think, is the role it plays in catastrophic weather events like what we see in Iowa. And then, of course, what to do about it. And as we just saw last week, with this cap-and-trade bill that collapsed in the Congress, there is very little consensus about how to tackle the global warming.
Let's take a call from Iowa, where the floods are. We've got Michael in Cedar Rapids. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering whether or not anyone's thinking about the fact that we have so much standing water now. As I drive up the highway, I see all the standing water in the flooded areas that's not going to flow back to the river. What are we going to do about the possibility of West Nile virus popping up again in a lot of these areas where we really haven't had to worry about it? Because I know the mosquito population is going to go through the roof.
David Yepsen, what about the aftermath? It's still surging on down the Mississippi, so it's active sandbagging time, and we know that right now. The last time, 1993, I was out there with my whole family, from 10-year-old son to 60-year-old mom sandbagging. Still moving down there, but what about the aftermath? In crops, in health, in infrastructure damage, what do you see?
All that is true. I mean, the television images tend to be of floods at their height. Long after the story moves downriver, the news stories tend to focus on river crests, and you know, is St. Louis going to have a record crest or not? But the reality is, as the caller mentioned, there is a huge cleanup that has to go on afterwards. There is still standing water. I had to drive through some of it today to come to this, and it's there are huge mosquito infestations here in Polk County. The health department. I heard quoted as saying that we have seven times the number of mosquitoes now than we did the same time a year ago. So there are real public health concerns at this point.
And what about the crops, David? You know, I heard a farmer the other day saying, finally, we've got good crop prices, $7 corn, and the crop's going to be lousy. You know, our own place, we've got the corn in, but not the soybeans, and it looks like they may not get in. What are the crop implications here?
Well, this is where this flood starts to have real ramifications for all Americans. Food prices are going to accelerate. We already had estimates prior to this flood that food prices were going to raise. It go up anywhere from 4.5% to 5.5%. Then, you know, that was raised to 10% by the end of the year. And I've seen some estimates now that they will be as much, corn prices could be as much as 30% higher at this same time next year. That means a lot more expense for food at the grocery store, for protein-based foods, and you know, this is a worldwide situation, and food prices are going up in other countries. I think that causes enormous ramifications for a lot of poor people. I do think, Tom, you have to point out that these disasters really do affect lower-income people much harder than those of us in the higher income brackets. Many of these people live along these rivers because the housing is less expensive. They've lost their possessions.
Yep.
In many cases, they can't get back in their homes, and they've lost their jobs.
Whether they're in the floodplain or facing it at the supermarket months down the road.
That's correct.
Let's go from the big floodwaters there, and I'm happy to talk about it all hour long. And listeners, tell us your stories. Iowa listeners, we really want to hear from you. But we've got big doings on the political front as well this week. And Jack Beattie, I want to hear from you on this front. Barack Obama is saying he's opting out of public campaign financing for the general election for the fall. Hasn't happened since the Watergate era. Everybody's taken it. The $84 million will stay on the table. John McCain will take it. But Barack Obama, he's got maybe several times that anticipated in his coffers. Yesterday, posted an announcement on his website that he's opting out. In the webcast, he accused John McCain's campaign of being, quote, fueled by contributions from Washington lobbyists and special interest PACs.
It's not an easy decision, especially because I support a robust system of public financing of elections. But the public financing of presidential elections, as it exists today, is broken. And we face opponents who become masters at gaming this broken system.
And the Republicans came right back. A Republican National Committee spokesman, Alex Conant, saying Obama was not honoring a solid earlier promise.
He told the American people he would sit down with John McCain and work out a deal where they would both take public financing, and he's walking away from that promise. It's very disappointing and totally inconsistent with his campaign promise to be a new sort of politician.
Jack Beattie, Barack Obama says, I am a new sort of politician. I'm using the Internet, getting small contributions from millions of people, under $100. This is democracy, and I'm out of this system. What do you say, Jack?
Well, I think it's disingenuous of him in the extreme. He's doing this because he's going to get more money than McCain, and he's breaching a principle that's more important perhaps even than his election, and that principle is that our system is besotted with private money, that organized money, investment-driven politics is what we do in America today. And the next president needs to be able to have the moral authority to go to Congress and say, look, we're going to get off this system. We're going to give the public a chance to have laws that reflect their interest, and we're going to have public funding for congressional campaigns. Obama, with this gesture, has robbed himself of that moral authority to be able to go to Congress and really change the system. And without doing that, the various things he wants to do on energy, on health care, on other things, he won't be able to get them done because the private interest lobbying and campaign contributions will buy out the congressman, including in his own party, as they did just yesterday in this telecom immunity deal. So I think one understands why he does it. It's a bad decision, I think, overall for his message and also for what the country needs, which is sweeping campaign finance reform.
Matt Cotenini, I want to get you on that, but we've got to take a short break here. David Yepsen, before we go, how do you think this plays politically? Can Obama say, I'm stepping away from this, but it's because I've got all your small contributions out there? Does it hurt him when John McCain's camp says this is disingenuous, he's not playing straight? Or on balance, are American voters forgiving on this? Who cares? Off we go.
I think that's right. I do not think this is a voting issue. I agree with Jack. I think Barack Obama has caved into a simple desire to raise more money. He can raise more money, so he's going to find a way to do it. He's playing word games with previous statements. So it's bad, and I think it hurts his image a bit. But come November, do American voters, is this going to be a voting issue with a lot of Americans? I don't think so.
Yepsen joins us, columnist for the Des Moines Register in Iowa. Matt Cotenetti is here from the Weekly Standard in Washington, author of The K Street Gang. Jack Beatty's here as well, and have just been talking about Barack Obama stepping away from $84 million in public campaign financing, the first presidential candidate to do that since the legislation came onto the books way back in the Watergate era. Let's go to Gladys in Buffalo, New York. Gladys, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm just amazed. I listen to the guys talk, and I cannot believe that they're sitting there postulating that somehow he's dishonest and he hasn't kept his word. Everyone takes the $80 million, and then they raise three times that amount of money outside of the system where you can't account for it, you don't know where it's coming from. And simply because he wants to take donations from the average American citizen who is now donating in record numbers, all of a sudden it's a sin to accept the money.
So you say it's fair, it's right.
Everyone complains about how special interest groups are controlling the system.
Matt Cotenetti, what about it? John McCain has welcomed players outside of that $84 million to come on, with their private sort of campaign assistance to him from the sidelines. Lots of money there as well. Gladys says she agrees with Barack Obama. It's a broken system, and if he can get out of it, good on him.
Yeah, but what 527 is running an ad right now? It's not a Republican 527. It's a Democratic one. It's MoveOn.org is running this campaign against McCain on the war. I think the caller is right. You know, the campaign finance system, which McCain did a lot to create, is a convoluted mess, and it deserves to go. People should be able to give as much money as they want, and politicians should spend as much money as they choose, as long as we have instant disclosure. And I think that's something that Obama may end up enacting through default. But it's clear that he also broke his promise. I mean, he said he's called for public financing of campaigns in the past, and if he promised to abide by the current regulations this time around, and when it became inconvenient for him, he decided against it.
Jack Beatty?
Of course, it has to be pointed out, Tom, that McCain himself has trouble. Indeed, he's conducted a kind of serpentine course on this campaign financing in this season. Some people think he's even breaking the law right now because he's continuing to spend over the spending limits he promised he would abide by during the primary season, which is now. You know, he opted into the public system last year to save his campaign and then used the promise of the federal funding he'd be getting to secure a loan to further leverage his campaign. Then he opted out of the system again to go ahead. You know, and the GOP head of the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, says, hey, you can't do that, Senator McCain. Unilaterally, you just can't drop out of the system and then come back into it. So he's gamed the system. There's just no doubt about it. And his hands aren't clean on this at all.
David Yepsen, lots of gaming here. On the other hand, if Obama does this, and he's doing it, and he surges towards some kind of $500 million general election campaign, where are we headed in American politics, David? If the gloves come off, I mean, next time out it could be Republicans raising that much money, I guess. Where does this take our political process, David?
Well, money has always been a factor in American politics going back to the founders. And my observation, we're into water metaphors out here right now, Tom, is that money in politics is like water on a flat roof. It will find a way through. So you can write all the rules and all the laws and limits that you want, but there will be very intelligent, creative people who work full-time at finding ways around that.
And yet, David, for decades now, that public financing has been there and been used, and yes, there's leakage around the edges, but it gave some kind of constraining factor on the general election, didn't it?
Yes and no. I mean, it was for a while, but, you know, what individual groups, labor unions were doing, those were all things that were not seen. I think Matt has hit upon a point here that the cure for this is sunshine. Remove the limits, remove all these rules and regulations. With computers now, you can have instant disclosure. Voters who care about this can go and see who's giving money to politicians and how they're spending it. I do want to, I mean, it is a fact that Obama has said things about that he would take public financing.
Yes, he did.
That's on the record. And secondly, this idea that he's getting all his money in nickels and dimes is flawed. I mean, he is also raising big dollar contributions, and he's about to get a huge wave. I mean, I've heard estimates as high as $50 million from Clinton contributors who are now going to start helping the Democratic nominee, who are going to get well with Obama for having supported Hillary Clinton. So it's not just Barack Obama raising nickels and dimes on the Internet. He's off doing fundraisers.
Well, though, to be fair, on that front, it's an awful lot in those under $100 contributions, and that's a new development with his use of the Internet. We've got deep water in Iowa and a call from Waterloo, Iowa. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
I love the fact that Senator Obama is changing lanes and he's going to use privately funded funds. And if Senator McCain doesn't like it, what is opportunistic, if not going to Columbus Junction, Iowa, during a flood, to say to the people that he cares, when during the primaries he scarcely made an appearance? He was asked by, as I understand, on an NPR program earlier today, officials in the state not to visit Columbus Junction, and he came anyway. The reason for not visiting was that he would pull needed law enforcement from flood detail to protect him. Now, Senator Obama was supposed to come last week during a flood period, and he honored the request of our, you know, government and said, okay, I'll stay out of your way.
There's a lot of towns to visit out there, Karen, but I hear it. I hear what you're saying, and a big debate simmering there on where this is going to take the country and this campaign. We've got so much on the plate this week. I want to get to something else here as well. We're happy to talk more about that, but domestic surveillance, big steps going on there. Democrats and Republicans sitting down trying to hammer something out that will get phone companies off the hook for breaking the law in response to the White House request in the wake of 9/11. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer of Maryland negotiated for the Democrats on this new rollout of a FISA bill, said that we've got a new version, not as good as before, but he said the new bill provides the needed immunity for telecoms.
But it will accommodate the protection of civil liberties going forward. It will, I think, provide for much greater protection than the Senate bill provided for individuals, and it will provide for court review.
Matt Continetti, what do you see emerging here now? Is this something that you, as a you know, good conservative, are comfortable with, the degree of latitude that the federal government, if this all goes through, will have to listen in on Americans in this country when it comes to terror and even beyond terror?
Yeah, well, that's I don't think that's a fair description of what this bill does, Tom. But listen, I have a rule in politics, which is that when both the left and the right are angry at something, it means that a good law has been passed. And in this case, with this compromise, you have people on both the left who think that it's an invasion of civil liberties and people on the right who think that it's an infringement on executive power upset at it, which to me says it's a pretty good compromise. The compromise does two things. One, it says that as long as the telecoms can prove that they were acting in good faith in cooperation with the administration at a time of national crisis and catastrophe, that they're off the hook from these lawsuits that have been put in about two dozen or more lawsuits that are in these courts. And the second thing it does is that it will allow the FISA judges to approve procedures for wiretapping calls that are routed through U.S. servers. The problem has always been, FISA has been under law since 2007. The problem is that in 2007, a judge made a ruling that said that even foreign-to-foreign communications, that is, guys that we're interested in listening in who are not Americans, both of parties of the conversation are overseas, but those calls are routed through U.S. communication servers, as often happens in this globalized, connected world. Even those now fall under, due process and FISA regulations. That's what this compromise now is dealing with, because what it says is, as long as the judge approves the procedures for listening to these calls, the intelligence community can do its job. I think this is a good compromise.
But the actual case is kind of pro forma. I mean, you say that's not the right description. I don't know. Wall Street Journal says it's most sweeping rewrite of U.S. domestic spying powers in three decades, ensuring that much of the controversial surveillance operation created by President Bush in secret will outlast his administration, would permit the federal government to listen to communications of U.S. citizens without a specific warrant, would also expand government powers to monitor communications on topics other than terrorism, and, of course, would let the telecommunications companies get out from those, 40 or so lawsuits that they face for participating in the prior version of the NSA program. Jack, what do you see?
Well, what's been compromised here is the Fourth Amendment. It's out the window, and this is a serious, serious breach in that. And it is also a clear, this telecom amnesty, it's a clear victory for money in politics. And something like scores of millions of dollars have been spent by these telecoms to win this, to pay off these congressmen, because these 44-odd suits would have cost them billions. So it's millions to save billions. Those suits further would have thrown light on the administration's dealings, on the full scope of this breach of American law. It would have also implicated the Democrats. The Democratic leadership knew about this kind of spying and did nothing. So this is the kind of thing where the party of incumbency in Washington, D.C., taking the money in from the telecoms and hiding their own responsibility, throws the Constitution out the window and legalizes this illegal procedure on the part of the administration.
David Yepsen in Des Moines, I want to get your view on how this is likely to play. Let's have another clip here from Senator Kit Bond of Missouri, the top-ranking Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee, in on these conversations. And he came out saying, well, the phone company shouldn't be punished for what the White House asked them to do.
When the government tells you to do something, I think you all recognize that is something that you need to do.
David Yepsen, does that sell? I mean, that's not exactly what I was taught coming up. Whatever the government says to do, do. What do you think about the direction that all this has taken, David?
Well, I think the Democrats saw a political vulnerability here. I disagree with Jack. I don't think that anyone was caving into big money here. If you want to have a national security wiretapping plan, you're going to have the cooperation of the telephone companies. I think the politics of this was more about Democrats wanting to get an issue off the table. Polling shows Americans do want an aggressive war on terrorism, if you will. They want to be hunting these people down, and the Democrats don't need to have Republicans beating them up for being weak on this issue. So I think there was an incentive there for them to settle this thing now. There was an incentive for Republicans to compromise because they were concerned about national security. So I don't sense that Democrats caved in on a money question here.
not caving on a money question, and yet, well, we'll see what happens in the House and Senate finally. But the law and the American way on surveillance changing right in front of our eyes here.
In any war, Tom, you know, the first casualty is the truth, and whenever you get into conflict, civil liberties do get limited, and I think that's what we're seeing here now.
Right. On, at the same time, the years stretch out and out, and what's wartime and what's just the way Americans live and maybe the way Americans are listened to. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Eileen from Corning in Adams County, southwest Iowa. Eileen, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to your very first item when you were talking about the floods.
Yes.
With this many 500-year floods, it's kind of, why is nobody looking at the model? You know, misfeasance, malfeasance, nonfeasance. It's like whoever's in charge of making things so that we don't have these catastrophes.
But who are you shaking your fist at, Eileen? The big guy upstairs, Lord Almighty, or what?
Well, most of the problems have been caused by levee failure, whether you're talking about Katrina or whether you're talking about the stuff up and down the river. You know, nothing affects more Americans today, right now, today, than the flooding. Thousands of people losing their homes, their jobs, the small towns that may never be able to come back, cities, roads, etc. You know, it's kind of like if the Corps of Engineers or whoever has the ability, you know, to see to it that different parameters are used or somehow that these people, it's like nothing has been done since Katrina.
Block,
you know,
those waters.
Reinforce
the levees. Eileen, thanks for your call. David Yepsen, how about the man-made part of what we're seeing in the Midwest right now? How do you look at it?
Well, I think that there is going to have to be more done with infrastructure. We've known that for some time. I thought it was interesting, the one levee that just broke in Des Moines, there have been a lot of levee breaks, but the Army Corps of Engineers said it was not properly built in the 1950s. They had spent about 12 years redesigning the thing, and the spokesman for the Army Corps of Engineers said that we don't have the money to do this right now. We didn't have the money. The war in Iraq is taking money for other priorities. So this was a good example, to my way of thinking. When the Army Corps itself is willing to say, you know, that we have to fight this war in Iraq, so we do not have money for investments here at home. I do think, that said, I do think the federal response to this has been better than Katrina.
Good.
I think the administration learned something. And let's also remember the politics of this, Tom. You look at these states that have been hit by this. Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri, these are all battleground states in November. So, you know, we're going to get people like John McCain coming out here because these are toss-up states, and I think there's going to be a fair amount of attention paid to these states because of that.
But Matt Continetti, it does give you a shiver. If we're going to see, as the federal group says this week, we may see more and more of this. This stuff is hard to take. Its implications way beyond just the small towns Eileen is talking about, where it's bad enough if they're ended. But, I mean, we're talking crop prices. We're talking inflation for the whole country. We're talking major expenses for the country. Are we looking at a century of this becoming, you know, what we've got to grapple with while we deal with everything else, Matt?
I don't know, Jack. I mean, it's the weather. I mean, what you know, you can't control the weather, but you have to be prepared. And I think David was absolutely right. So far, the response has been pretty exemplary on all levels. You can't control for every circumstance. You're going to have catastrophes, but look at the ways in which our government is dealing with it now, as opposed to other natural disasters that we've seen in recent months, whether it be in China or in Burma. Right? I mean, it's a constant reminder of human frailty. We have our problems and we argue about them, but at the end of the day, Mother Nature is queen.
Human frailty and Mother Nature, Jack, and yet humans are right in the middle of this picture as well.
They sure are. It's another example of you know, how dependent everything in our lives, from our lives to our economy, is on our infrastructure. And the crisis in building infrastructure, I think, is going to require the next president to talk seriously about a capital budget, a way of funding the massive improvements that have to be made that involves substantial and justified borrowing over time. Because, of course, it is justified because it would benefit the future.
Well, brace up. Price tag could be bid. Jack Beatty, Matt Continetti, David Yepsen, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Joy, pain, and the way back machine this week. Los Angeles falls to Boston in the NBA Finals. Ecstatic Boston Celtic Kevin Garnett whooping it up.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Top of the world. Top of the world.
Tiger Woods pulled off a dazzling sudden-death victory in the U.S. Open with a bum knee and fractured leg and heads off to surgery.
I'm glad I'm done. I'm done. I really don't feel like playing anymore.
And Rodgers and Hammerstein's 1949 musical, South Pacific, revived on Broadway, picked up 7 Tony Awards.
There is nothing like a dream, nothing in the world.
All right. We're looking at a week in the news. Midwest flood rolls on. Obama says no to public finance and a lot more. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Something that ties a lot of these things together, of course, is money. With the floods here, it's there's talk about funding infrastructure and more levees, and the problem is levees are just going to compound the problem, squeeze the rivers even further. We need a comprehensive regional plan where agriculture use is on a, like Iowa State has said, there's a 4-year crop rotation cycle instead of the 1 or the 2-year cycle that, because farmers want to make a profit off all the corn. We need to have better soil quality. We need to have better development plans for the region so that these rivers don't keep flooding. I mean, we've had 2 500-year floods in 15 years. Out of the last, the top five crests on the Cedar River here in Cedar Falls,
yep,
all have been in the last 20. Only one has been from 1961. So money is driving all of these decisions. Money is driving Obama. Money is driving what's behind all these floods. And we need to get sort of unhooked out of that and get our heads out of the money so that we can actually start seeing things for the way they are.
Well, yeah, it makes the world go around. That's a big agenda you're describing right there. David Yepsen, is that scale of conversation underway in Iowa? Sort of let's remake this region to deal with what may be a different climatological reality?
Well, there has been some of that discussion. Even if you want to attribute this to global warming, I mean, by the time we fix that, it's going to be another,
who knows,
century. So I think even if you do, David is right in his call in suggesting that better floodplain management, retentions, all that. But that's all part of this discussion. At the end of the day, you're going to have, this country has to put some more into infrastructure, whether it's bridges, highways, or in this case, levees. And there are things individual communities can and individuals can and should be doing. Every water plant should be hardened against floods. Utilities should raise their substations. It's easier to fight a flood when you've got clean water and adequate utilities. Those are things communities can be doing for themselves. Individuals need their own disaster plans. You shouldn't put electrical switches in basements. You should get your family heirlooms out of basements. I mean, there are things like this that individuals can do to mitigate this. But the reality is we're not going to turn Cedar Rapids, Iowa, what's left of it, back into a floodplain. Mm. There's going to be a community there. It will rebuild, and it will require some levees, and that's going to require some infrastructure money.
Start with the simple stuff, but what a picture right there. I want to turn to the big picture of war on terror, Barack Obama talking about that this week, and John McCain punching back pretty hard. ABC's Nightline Monday night, reporter Jake Tapper asked Obama how he could be sure that certain controversial domestic anti-terrorism policies instituted by the Bush administration were not crucial to the protection of U.S. citizens.
It is my firm belief that we can track terrorists, we can crack down on threats against the United States, but we can do so within the constraints of our Constitution. So let's take the example of Guantanamo. What we know is that in previous terrorist attacks, for example, the first attack against the World Trade Center, we were able to arrest those responsible, put them on trial. They are currently in U.S. prisons, incapacitated.
Our response to the attacks of 93, maybe as a model. John McCain's campaign responding right away in a conference call the next day. Randy Shineman, McCain's campaign director of foreign policy and national security, said Obama is a, quote, perfect manifestation of a September 10th mindset.
What Senator Obama's statement reflects last night is that he's advocating a policy of delusion that ignores what happened and the failed approach of the 1990s, which allowed Al-Qaeda to thrive and prosper unmolested, and that policy clearly made America less safe and more vulnerable.
Jack, what do you hear in this back and forth on terrorism? Obama embracing, sort of the 1993 response, the sort of criminal, let's treat it as a criminal problem. Not only that, but with that as a cornerstone, and McCain punching back hard there through his spokesman.
Well, I think Obama was just acknowledging the fact there has not been, over 7 years, a single conviction for a terrorist act at Guantanamo. By contrast, the people who bombed the World Trade Center in 1993, some of them at least, are in jail today. And he was merely saying that and he was also standing by the Supreme Court, the decision of a largely Republican Supreme Court, which said that habeas corpus rights apply to these Guantanamo detainees. And he was further saying that we don't have to throw away 200 years of American tradition to fight this war on terror. And then he turned it on McCain and said, you know, they're attacking me for making such comments, but who are these people to be attacking me on 9/11, since they were the ones, McCain certainly, Bush certainly, who pushed the war in Iraq, which has been as Obama, I think, rightly says, a distraction from the war on terror, based as that is in Afghanistan and along the border in Pakistan. So I think that I agree with Obama, but I'm sure the Republicans are going to flay him now and distort what he says to make it seem as if you favor the Constitution in America, you're a dangerous radical.
Matt Cantonetti, how do you see the security issue playing out in this campaign, this contest, McCain and Obama? Obama, I guess, trying to sort of bring some of his nuances into it and saying up front the Republicans will try to turn this into a, you know, scare tactics. They've done it before. They'll do it again. But do you think he's got the pulse of the sort of national view on this now, Matt?
Well, McCain enjoys advantages on the terrorism issue. You know, who do you trust better to handle terrorism? The public's more ambivalent on the Iraq issue, which is separated out in a lot of polling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he'll continue to enjoy an advantage if Senator Obama continues to talk the way he did to the Nightline reporter, Jake Tapper, because what it showed was, excuse me, not necessarily a September 10 mentality, but a lack of a preventive mentality toward terrorism. If you're going to handle terrorism cases as criminal prosecutions, that happens after the terrorism attack has occurred, right? I mean, these guys didn't go on trial. Some of them, as Jack points out, a few others were able to escape. But they didn't go into trial after the attack occurred. The Bush approach to terrorism is preventive. It's meant to detain combatants, in some cases the ones in Guantanamo. It's a forward-leaning approach to terrorism in order to prevent attacks. And what we've seen is that in 7 years since September 11, there have been no attacks on U.S. soil. So I think this is a debate that McCain wants to have. And that's why you also saw Obama shift quickly to the Iraq issue and the question of whether it was right to go into Iraq, on which he enjoys a sizable advantage.
Matt, David Yepsen, how do you read it on the national security front, on how to deal with terrorism? You hear the turf that Barack Obama is trying to carve out there. He's trying to recast this debate a bit. Do you think he can be successful with that? Or, you know, as Matt says, can McCain come back with a preventive approach that George Bush has described and whoop him?
I think this is a healthy debate. I mean, there's nothing more important that a president does than the protection of the national security. There are different approaches here. As I mentioned earlier, one of the casualties in wartime is a nation's civil liberties. So we need to have this debate in this country over how we're going to approach this war going forward on domestic surveillance. Do you want to execute Osama bin Laden or not, assuming this country gets the chance?
Execute him. We haven't even caught him.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, assuming you get the chance. I think that's a healthy debate. I think Barack Obama does have to do some explaining here, because McCain does hold the high political ground on terrorism, and the country is pretty angry about it, and it wants to take some serious steps about it. He can try to shift the debate to Iraq. That's all very healthy, and I think it's a wonderful disagreement this country has, and we ought to have this debate.
On the other hand, Matt Cantonetti, you're citing the polls there. There's the Washington Post ABC News poll this week saying 84% of the nation now saying, or those polled now saying, the nation is seriously on the wrong track. That is moving up toward 100%. Matt Cantonetti, are we reaching a consensus on that? And what does that mean?
I wish I knew. This poll number has only gone up since 2004. And, of course, Bush won re-election with the majority of the people thinking that the country was on the wrong track. Now,
but majority 84%.
All right, now 84%. You're reaching a totals. It's stymied. I'm actually wondering whether it's even worthwhile to ask that question.
Should we just all agree?
Yeah, everyone. We've reached a national consensus. I do want to get back to an earlier point, though, which is these different approaches to terrorism. What McCain can say is this, which is that if you take the 1993 model of going after terrorists, the prosecutorial model, what did we see in the 1990s? Well, we saw the first World Trade Center. We saw the Khobar Towers bombing. We saw the attack on our embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. The indictment for Osama bin Laden was issued 10 years ago in 1998. We haven't captured him. We didn't capture him before 2001. Mm. What have we seen since 9/11 and the adoption of a preventive approach on terrorism? We have seen no major terrorist attacks in our soil. Our embassies have not been bombed. We've seen major wars, right?
Many thousands dead, wars. Many billions gone.
That's right. But the homeland has been protected. I think McCain can win that argument.
Let's go to Nashville and Freddie. Hi, Freddie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. It's frustrating to listen to Matt talk about Obama's approach as only reactive as far as the rule of law is concerned when he's actually made several remarks that are very aggressive about pursuing terrorism and the possible violation of sovereignty, including in Pakistan, in order to go after bin Laden and other top known terrorists.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he's sitting too far back on his heels there. Jack, what do you think about the balance that Obama is striking?
Well, I mean, I think this is John McCain's only card, and it is the case and Obama is merely saying he's standing by the court. These people should have habeas corpus rights. That is the American tradition, and he's saying and he brought up the 93 business to say when we followed the law, look what we got. We've had these detainees. We could have followed the law, and perhaps some of them would be in jail. Instead, we just put them there without charge. And I think that's that seems to me an inarguable point. And the Republicans are just making up this, you know, pre 9/11 mindset and hanging it on him. And you know, the people who are doing this. Is it Shermerhorn or whatever his name is, the fellow that you just quoted? He's one of he's a neocon from way back. Jim Woolsey, the other guy, is the conspiracist
from
the CIA director.
Mm-hmm.
Who you know was trying to connect Saddam with the 93 bombing?
I'm sure they won't be alone before this is over. I mean, a lot of people you know are going to bring that perspective to the fore.
They certainly are, and I think they're going to keep hammering away at him on this. And the question is, will a 2004 campaign essentially work in 2008 when 85% of the people think we're on the wrong course?
Well, I'm going to think David's right. It's the right debate to be having, Matt.
Yeah, Tom, I just want to answer the caller. The caller's absolutely right. And what that tells me is Obama's all over the place on these issues. And, of course, not just on terrorism issues. He was all over the place on NAFTA, now telling Nina Easton of Fortune magazine that, well, sometimes the rhetoric on the campaign trail can get kind of heated. So what does that mean about NAFTA? What does it mean about Iraq, where he's gone all over the place from saying he's going to pull our troops out, combat troops in 16 months, to now saying, well, I am going to listen to the generals. Or whether it's talking with Ahmadinejad, where now he says he's going to meet with Ahmadinejad and the other dictators without preconditions, but then he tells AIPAC last week, well, not necessarily without any preconditions, if and only if I'll do it, if and only if, he said, if it protects the interests of the United States. Yeah. Obama is a cipher, but he's also one of the most extraordinary American politicians we've seen in our lifetime. It's going to be an unknown quantity if he becomes president, as is likely.
One woman's all over the place. Another's nuance. I don't know. We'll look at it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Jack, you've been looking at McCain on this issue of consistency. And, of course, we've had the drilling turn this week, kind of an interesting, very public one.
We have, and that drilling, his turnabout on that, I mean, just last month, he gave essentially the Obama position today on offshore drilling. He very cogently summarized the arguments why this wouldn't yield us any appreciable energy, any appreciable oil for decades, that it wouldn't lower the price, that it would endanger the environment, and so on. And now he turned around on this issue. And unfortunately for him, the president joined him in that, which doesn't help his attempts to put distance between himself and this deeply unpopular president. But, you know, John McCain and oil, he is the leading senator receiving contributions from the oil industry, over $700,000 in the last cycle. And he has 22 former oil lobbyists as fundraisers and advisors around him. And he's desperate, and I think you can just see this, he's desperate to get campaign funding, more of it, out of Texas. So he goes down to Texas, he makes a speech, the checkbooks open up. I mean, he had a bad April. In April, he raised $6.4 million in Texas, where Obama pulled out $6.5 million.
Yeah, a lot of money flying. Jack, our time is short. I want to get one more out there to David Yepsen before we go. David, this business on Israel, the New York Times says, major military exercise rehearsing for a potential bombing attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. They may have the stomach for it. Do you think the American public does if the U.S. should get dragged into something like that?
I think it's very scary and it's very troublesome. It's not surprising, but it's one of these developments that's on the horizon. I have said all along that I think world terrorism events are going to have an impact on this election, whether it's a terrorist attack, whether it's Israel looking out for its own
national
security.
Not just the debate, but some actual event.
Some actual event that will eclipse all of this. I mean, I think in a sense, the terrorists also have a vote in our election. And when that happens, God forbid, then it will change the entire dialogue of the campaign. It may be McCain's only card, as Jack points out, but it will be then an important one. So it's important now to have this debate. I do think that when politicians change their positions on things, I wish they'd just stand up and own up to it and say, I'm changing my position.
And just do it. Don't hold your breath. David, we're out of time. From Des Moines, thanks for being with us. Matt Continetti, thank you for joining us. Jack Beatty, always good to have you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. There's the week. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.